This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Easy activities kill you on the long term. If you think about any of them, whether it's vaping or drinking alcohol, eating sugar or watching porn.
But our brain loves it. We feel happy when we watch porn or we eat McDonald's or we have a milkshake.
Very temporarily, you feel good.
I'm the creator of The Dose Effect, an acronym for dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin and endorphins. In this episode, we are deep diving into the world of dopamine.
Addiction is the progressive narrowing of the things that bring you pleasure. When you look at your life, you may notice that like when you start getting addicted to things, the majority of your pleasure is coming from a few very finite sources. It might be coming from a vape, from social media, and from porn. And those might be the moments you're feeling best.
How the hell do we change that?
The reason dopamine evolved in our brain is to effectively make doing hard things feel good, because we had to hunt and find food and forage and build shelter and raise the kids. And dopamine was rewarding any behavior that was advantageous to our survival.
Let's just say I'm really addicted to alcohol. I drink every weekend, 3 times a week, and I get so smashed. I don't know how the hell to get out of it. I've tried to give up many times. I don't know what to do. What do I do? TJ.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to Millennial Mind.
Thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you here and very excited for this podcast because I feel like there is so much that I need to learn. But for people who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name's TJ Power, and I've spent a huge amount of my life for the last 10 years studying psychology, specifically neuroscience, and I've niched very hard in understanding our brain chemicals, things like dopamine, for example. And whilst also studying this, I've also had a great deal of difficulty throughout that 10 years with being addicted to various different things, actually since when I was way younger, as young as I can really remember. And it's been kind of ironic learning a lot about my brain chemistry whilst also being addicted to things. And then over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I've really found a path out of being addicted to various different things in our modern world. And yeah, now I'm kind of sharing that with the world.
I love that. And I really love how you said it's kind of like a journey of you battling through something and then also learning at the same time. What kind of sparked your interest in learning about our brain chemistry?
What sparked my interest? Initially when I was younger, I played a lot of golf. I was almost like one of the things that really helped me with addiction when I was young was channeling it into a sport, which okay. We'll come on to discover why that can be pretty helpful. Got really into golf and then got exposed to kind of performance psychologists really young. So started learning about psychology and I struggled a huge amount in school. Couldn't really get on with the different like lessons and stuff like that. At college, chose to study psychology and found it kind of interesting. And then from the ages of 16 to 21, I had a pretty hard period in my life. I lost 5 people in my family within 5 years, which was very hard as like a young fella to go through that. And that then began kind of a series of addictive experiences. And then I thought, wow, I'm struggling. Studying psychology seems to interest me. And then, yeah, went down that lens into brain chemistry stuff.
You said, first of all, really sorry to hear that.
Thanks.
Because I think that's a lot to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You said you started being addicted to certain things when you were younger. What were those things?
So the earliest things I can remember is sugar. So like I can remember literally being about 5 years old, very little. And in my kitchen, my mum would have this sugar, like brown sugar on this top shelf. This is funny because this is just coming to my head now, but I was trying to think younger. And I would climb up onto the cabinet in the kitchen, then climb to the top of the shelf, and I could literally put spoonfuls of sugar in my mouth. So from very young, I had like that desire for like, what are these big dopamine hits you can experience? And then as I got older, I started smoking cigarettes super young. I was probably 11 or 12 years old smoking cigarettes, which kind of breaks my heart now.
Yeah.
When I meet young kids, like 11, 12 years old, when I'm training schools and stuff, I think, how was I possibly smoking cigarettes then? But yeah, that was kind of the beginning of the journey.
You know, I think one question that people always ask with any substance or anything that's addictive is how do you start? Because if you think about things like alcohol or cigarettes or drugs, they don't taste nice.
Yeah.
they don't taste nice at all. And, you know, I kind of understand it a lot with sugar or vaping or, you know, things that give you an immediate serotonin hit, like porn or sex. I kind of understand those things a little bit more when people are like, I'm addicted to them straight away. I understand the appeal. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to smoking, I always think people always ask as well, when I've had this conversation, is like, what makes that person pick up the cigarette? Is it the peer pressure? Okay, fine, the peer pressure. But the first time you smoke a cigarette, it tastes disgusting. So how do we become addicted to these things? Social media was the thing I was going to say. Like, with social media, you can pick it up and know that, okay, well, this is great and I'm really enjoying it and I'm learning something from it. It's not directly something that you think is bad for you. With a cigarette, though, I think the question always arises is, how do people actually get addicted? Because you pick it up, you taste it, it tastes disgusting, and then you put it down again.
It is interesting. Both cigarettes and alcohol are aversive at first. Mm. Like, our body actually very instinctively knows it doesn't like it.
Yeah.
The challenge with cigarettes and alcohol is how much they've been culturally integrated into our society. So from so young, you're watching movies and you're watching TV shows, and it's really creating this ideal image of smoking is cool, like drinking is cool. I remember watching like Peaky Blinders, for example, and that Tommy Shelby guy makes smoking look like the coolest activity in the 100%. World. And that, alongside then the groups you begin to grow up in, also will engage with the behaviors. I remember when I was young, seeing like my siblings or something smoking, and I idolized my siblings. Now I'm kind of getting them in trouble, but saw them smoking and thought, all right, so smoking's on the table. And then when I was young, and this probably was a component of the addiction, being cool and being perceived as cool was something I really valued. In the last few years, I've come more into just feeling like I can be myself. However, that was something I valued. And if it was like kind of cool and rebellious to smoke cigarettes or to get drunk, I was all for it, effectively.
How can we kind of stop that initial phase? Because what I'm worried about, and kind of what you said as well, is that I still sometimes feel like I need the validation. I still sometimes think that something looks cool.
Yep.
And it's ingrained in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I agree with you, actually. I actually think that on a man, smoking is very attractive.
Interesting.
And that is bizarre. I know that's bizarre.
Yeah, well, kind of, but also not because
but
of how
I
much
don't
it
find
showing.
It unattractive at okay. all. I've never found it unattractive. If someone's smoking in front of me, and I think it is because it reminds me of like the Wolf of Wall Street and like an alpha male, or it reminds me of like the Great Gatsby where they're smoking, and it reminds me of exactly what you said in Peaky Blinders and all of these shows. A lot of the alpha men are smoking cigars, cigarettes. And what's also interesting is my partner, he doesn't smoke, but he actually said like smoking a cigar is very different from smoking a cigarette. And I was
I
like, why?
See that a little bit.
But for him, he grew up watching things like Peaky Blinders and other things like that, or I don't know, something else where smoking cigars was acceptable and okay.
Yeah.
But smoking cigarettes is like disgusting. So his perception is always like, if he sees somebody smoking, gross. But if he sees someone smoking a cigar, kind of cool. Which is really interesting.
I think in that lane of not getting addicted to things, or the beginning of the path of getting off of these things, you do really have to go down the route of shifting who you're idolizing. Because if you're on the path, I mean, I was like a teenager growing up watching crap like Geordie Shore and all that kind of stuff. So my idols were the people that did all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think 3 or 4 years ago when I thought, right, I've got to change stuff up. I want to get healthy. I want to feel good and work and all that kind of stuff. I really had to shift like the kind of mountain I was seeking to climb. Like, who was I aiming to get towards? And if you are aiming to get towards being like Tommy Shelby, you're probably going to end up pretty hooked on like whiskey and cigarettes. So I think, yeah, shifting who it is that you're looking up to, I think is massive.
You know, one thing with that, though, I find is that we're in this era of it's okay.
Interesting.
I do feel that with everything at the moment, we do say it's okay not to be perfect, which it is. I'm not saying we all have to be, and I'm not perfect by any means.
Yeah.
But I do feel like we are in this era where it's like, it's okay if you have one bad habit. It's okay if you have one bad trait. It's only one bad thing I'm doing in my life.
Yeah.
And when it comes with addiction, a lot of us don't want to admit that we are addicted to things, right? So let's just say, for example, you're a smoker and you eat really healthy, you maintain a very healthy lifestyle. It doesn't impact your running or your weightlifting or whatever it is that you're doing. It doesn't impact your relationships that much. You only occasionally smoke, let's say, like 1 or 2 cigarettes a day. For that person, they might say, you know, well, look, it's okay because it's my only bad habit. You know, how would they start to change that? Because when we're talking about who we're idolizing, and I completely agree with you on that, we also say, like, no one's perfect. So if nobody's perfect, then I shouldn't have to be either.
I agree, and I think it is challenging. The addiction itself is providing you with some kind of pleasurable experience, and because addictive things provide you with a very acute pleasure, they create this really fast rise in that dopamine chemical. All you think about the behavior itself is all that joy. That's kind of what you've paired it with in your mind. So say like watching porn, it's like, wow, when I watch porn, I feel really, really good because it's really stimulating. Or when I'm getting pissed, it feels really good. I think the most important thing is to like lengthen out how you're observing the addictive behavior. And instead of only observing in the acute moment, you have to get very good at seeing the whole impact it's having on you. So with smoking, for example, if you start thinking, okay, how am I feeling when I wake up before the vape? And if you notice, it's not, you're just not feeling very good. And then how am I feeling in the hours after the vape? And if you become far more familiar with how the whole behavior is impacting your life, you start getting motivated for change. And I found this massively. Like, I was like, it's not that bad, getting pissed on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then I started really coming in tune with like, how do I actually feel on Mondays and Tuesdays? And so many of us think like we just get like a physical hangover on a Saturday and Sunday, got like a headache, feel a bit sick, have a Domino's, watch some porn, whatever it is people might do to try and get themselves out of that feeling. And then it's like, well, the hangover's gone. Monday, Tuesday, you think that's nothing to do with how I feel. However, on average, it takes about 72 hours for alcohol, for example, to detox out of our system. And throughout that 72 hours, the dopamine is going to crash like crazy. And it's actually often the Monday and Tuesday that you'll feel the most significant mental side effects, whereby you'll feel kind of depressed or anxious and you'll be overthinking your work or your relationship, whatever it might be. And because it's a while since you've drunk the alcohol, you think it's nothing to do with that. It actually is this problem I'm worrying about. And the more I got in tune with fully observing how the addictions were impacting my life, the more I started growing this feeling within me of like, I should actually see what life's like without this behavior and see if it impacts me. And if you get really good at knowing the negative and then really good at feeling the positive of not having it, change begins to occur.
Do you think we're all addicted to something?
I really do. I mean, if I think through all my friends, all my family, everyone I know and have interacted with and with my work, like thousands of people with the training and stuff like that, I've never met someone that hasn't been addicted to something. And I think it varies significantly. Mm-hmm. I think our modern world is a world that's super hard not to be addicted to something. Like, there's just so many options of what you could be addicted to. And they're all within an arm's reach. They're all super tempting, whether it's sugar or vaping or porn. Like, all these things are so easy to get hold of. They're cheap, they're accessible, or they're free. And I feel like most of us are.
Why is it bad? I know this sounds like a really stupid question. So what if I'm addicted to watching porn? So what if I'm addicted to eating sugar? So what if I'm addicted to smoking?
This is
I'm not harming anyone.
Besides yourself.
Part myself. Right?
I'll tell you like a different lens of why it's bad. Mm. So this is an interesting thought. And I imagine people may not have thought about it like this before. So one of the most important chemicals of being a human being is dopamine.
Okay.
And I've studied what's called evolutionary neuroscience for the last like 5 to 10 years, which is just the study of our brain over human history. And for 300,000 years, we were running around as hunter-gatherers outside. And then for the last like, few thousand and then the last 100, we've rapidly changed how a human being spends their time. So a chemical like dopamine was completely designed for that world. It wasn't designed for this one. The reason dopamine evolved in our brain is to effectively make doing hard things feel good, because we had to hunt and find food and forage and build shelter and raise the kids. And dopamine was rewarding any behavior that was advantageous to our survival so that humans would survive. Because obviously that's like our only purpose, really, when you come down to the most simple thing. It's just survive on the planet. Just keep the humans going. That's what any animal's purpose is. So dopamine had this capacity. Hard activity, reward you, keep you alive. In our modern world, we've created activities that are complete opposites to that. Easy activities kill you on the long term, effectively. So like, if you think about any of them, whether it's vaping or drinking alcohol, eating sugar or watching porn, all of these things are doing the opposite of what dopamine actually want. They're actually creating a worse experience in the long term for humanity. And when you engage with it, just like our brain had the ability to reward the positive behavior, it's going to do the complete opposite to you. So progressively, the more you engage in it, the more porn, the more vaping, the more sugar, the worse and worse you're going to feel. Because it's very simply the really intelligent, instinctive part of us trying to send us a message saying this isn't a way for humanity to prosper. This is going to create great difficulty for our society. And our brain and body is so good at surviving. And that's the message we're all being sent right now as a result of our changing behavior. And then when you start changing, going back to the other original dopamine sources, you think, fuck, I feel amazing.
Wow. Okay, so explain this to me.
Yeah.
our brain is basically like a computer,
yeah.
right? That we have no control how to code it,
yep.
but it's been coded in a certain way.
Yeah, over so hundreds of thousands of years.
Hundreds of thousands of years. So now we've got all these addictions that we're seeing in our society,
yeah.
and our brain is almost rejecting them. Mm-hmm. So what you just said just now with all those habits, you mm-hmm. said that our brain is going to tell us that we don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But our brain loves it. We feel happy when we watch porn or we eat McDonald's or we have a milkshake.
Very temporarily, you feel good. So the way in which dopamine is designed to work is if you imagine a graph,
mm-hmm.
and imagine you're just starting at zero. So you've got just like normal baseline. You're at just standard level. If you took like an activity like hunting an animal, like something that would be ridiculously difficult, and that was really what dopamine was for. Hunting an animal, I might set out there with the group and it could take 4 or 5 hours in order to get that big rewarding experience. So dopamine is going to go very slowly up on a curve. You're going to experience a nice hit of reward and satisfaction and pleasure, and then it's going to calm back down. You'll still feel good. You'll feel balanced. In our modern world, we've managed to artificially hack the dopamine. So that feeling we could get off hunting after 5 hours, we can get in 10 seconds of scrolling TikTok. So the dopamine spikes super, super high. And the brain is always seeking for balance, that homeostasis word. And the brain's like, how the hell have I got up here? So then it crashes the dopamine really low because it wants to get back to the middle line.
Oh.
And each crash is what withdrawal is. All of that urge you get of like, I really want my vape, or I'm craving watching porn, or I really need sugar. That's because we're in what's called low baseline dopamine. And these artificial ups and downs effectively just like brutal for our brain to experience. And on the long term, what happens is our brain is like, can't deal with it, can't deal with the highs and lows. So its response is, I'll just produce less dopamine. And then when it starts producing less dopamine, you can't focus on anything, you feel kind of flat, you feel a bit depressed, low mood, that kind of stuff. And if you think about those words, so many of us live in that headspace where we feel flat, can't focus on anything, procrastinate. And that's simply our brain responding to the fact it can't cope with the big highs.
No way. That is so interesting. I'm like such a visual person, so I'm like trying to understand it. That makes so much sense to me. Okay, so how the hell do we change that?
Yes.
Can we change it?
We can. Okay. And I have managed to go through this journey, and so have like many people. So like it's definitely very fixable. It is something that, of course, will require like a little bit of effort and discipline and that kind of thing. But there is a path you can follow effectively. And yeah, I mean, shall I take us down?
I'll ask you, yeah. You've obviously had your own experiences with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, from what we've just talked about and how addicted so many of us are to so many different things within our society,
mm-hmm.
I think that your story can actually help with mm-hmm. really unpicking how we can go about that, and also providing hope to people that they can also quit whatever habit that they have today. So you talked about, you know, getting rid of your smoking addiction when you were 11.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start there. How did you kind of get rid of stopping smoking?
Okay, so for context, all of the addictions, smoking might have been the first one. Mm. Smoking and porn, probably similar time, discovered porn way too young, which has obviously screwed up my brain in other ways. So porn, smoking, alcohol and sugar. I'm probably hooked on all of those by like 12 years old, which is a joy. And then like gradually more and more partying and that kind of stuff, got into that world. And I lived within that world of addiction from the age of probably 11 till about 22. So I never did anything about it during that time. That was just the world I was in. And the path I basically followed was that about 22, I had one specific night where I was out and I was partying with my friends. It was near the end of university. And I took the partying experience too far and I left early. I really wasn't feeling good in my head. Effectively, what was happening based on what we've just discussed is that dopamine was crashing so hard. And I was getting an extremely strong message from my body saying, no, this is not good. This is not good.
Wow.
Went home and I lay in bed that night and I can remember it really well. And I remember chatting to myself, just thinking like, I really want a cool experience of life. That's something I've always desired. I wanted to build a business. And I wanted to be able to do something fun with my career and have loads of friends and all that sort of stuff. And I just remember like really like effectively deeping, how is this actually affecting my life, what I'm doing right now? Went deep into it and thought, okay, like change has to begin from here. Like I have to start observing very closely how the negative behavior is impacting me. So at that point, I didn't actually cut the addictions. I just had this agreement with myself that change must begin from now.
Yes.
It would be an absolute dream if this podcast itself begins that step or opens that door for people that are listening. If like, if you're listening, you think, to be fair, I'm hooked on loads of stuff or I'm hooked on one thing. This is when the door opens. For the next month, I spent a lot of time still engaging with the addictive behaviours, but when I was engaging with them and when they were wearing off and I wasn't interacting with them, I was really observing how it was making me feel. Previously, I just kind of ignored all the negatives and just been like, oh, there's so much positive, there's so much positive. So I started seeing the negatives. And very quickly, when you start really observing the negatives, like if you take something as basic as scrolling your phone, scroll your phone for like half an hour in the morning, whatever, TikTok. If you really sit and observe how you feel after scrolling TikTok, you realize you feel fucking shit. You feel super flat, dopamine crashes, you can't really bother to work, you procrastinate, you don't feel that good. And if you actually become in tune with whatever it is, alcohol, or how the vape makes you feel when you wear off, or porn makes you feel after, those people that watch a lot of porn, I think you'll be very familiar with exactly how you feel after porn. It doesn't feel great. And then I started observing it and thinking, okay, like I'm starting to build some kind of motive within me for change. I then started to take that step further. And the single biggest thing I ever did was I was so addicted to my phone. Like I just love social media, scrolling the videos, hooked on it. And I set myself this challenge, this actually when COVID was kicking off. And I set myself this challenge to go on a walk for an hour without my phone in the morning.
Amazing.
And I was like, that to me, that was like next to impossible to imagine an hour, no phone. Went out there, and out there, I heard all the negative shit in my head. Like, I think a lot of us nowadays are scared of the quiet. Like, always headphones in, podcast in, music playing, because at least I can ignore all these feelings. In my opinion, from a neuroscientific lens, the reason we hate the quiet is because our body is sending us such a strong message saying, please listen, you're hurting me, you're hurting me. And I then spent an hour out there and came home, and I thought, fuck, I've got some work to do here, because, like, my self-talk is screwed. In my opinion, the conversation in your head is occurring as a result of how you're kind of treating yourself and your lifestyle and behavior. And then I was like, I had this very strong feeling that I just had to keep doing this walk every morning without my phone, even though I hated the experience of doing it. Gradually, with every day I had these conversations, that desire within me to change my behavior was growing and growing and growing, because I was out there every day and I was thinking, I don't want this to be a shit experience in my head. I don't want to be constantly critiquing myself. You've been doing this, you've been doing that. So I started thinking, why don't I add some positive stuff into this conversation and start adding some positive behaviors in whilst I try and work on getting rid of the negative stuff? Because I didn't just cut everything cold turkey.
Got it.
I was still drinking some alcohol then, still smoking occasionally a cigarette, something like that. And that kind of began the path. We can go further into this, but that basically began the path. Really getting observant of the negative and then spending a lot more time in the quiet, specifically in natural environments, because the brain and body is just going to be more peaceful there.
What you just mentioned about spending time in solitude and spending time without a podcast is one of the single best things that has changed my life.
Okay.
Because I actually read a book called Digital Minimalism.
Nice. And is that Cal Newport?
Yes. And for my whole life, I thought that I was being super highly productive. And I was always listening to a podcast when I was walking, and I was like, wow, I'm so productive. And I think we're obsessed with this idea of productivity. We can no longer go for a walk without listening to a podcast. We can no longer sit on the tube without learning or reading a book or listening to a meditation or doing some kind of exercise, right? Like, everything has to be coupled up with something. And this is where you talk about habit stacking. You know, everyone's like, stack your habits together while you're washing, listen to your favorite podcast and learn a new thing every day. And when I read Digital Minimalism, I was like, I'm no longer going to go for a walk whilst listening to a podcast. I'm just going to stop listening to music and just listen to my thoughts. And actually, I have found it to be the most amazing hour of my life. Because I actually really in that time like to therapize myself. And I always find that when I go for a walk and I talk to myself, and sometimes like now I forget I've lost my headphones. So now people think I'm mad. So now I have to put my phone next to my ear and I'm like, you know what? That's a really, but like, I'll have to like therapize myself like that. Oh, so it just looks like someone's walking. But, you know, we are obsessed with, you know, putting everything together. And, you know, like I said, I think it can get so consuming where you don't know what your own thoughts are and you don't know what you want and you don't know what you're thinking. And that first step that you just said is just observe how you feel. So many of us don't want to observe how we feel.
It is scary.
It's so scary.
And it's hard to hear those messages.
Yeah.
It's like growing up as a kid and your parents trying to give you a really good piece of advice and you thinking, nah, I don't want to hear it. But like sometimes you just need to hear the piece of advice. And coming back to that reason dopamine is so significant and the hunter-gatherer journey and all that sort of stuff is, our instinct within us just wants us here so badly. It wants you to stay alive. And all these things are harming that. And the message only gets stronger. So like it will only get louder if you go more into alcohol, more into smoking, more into porn, whatever it might be. the feelings within you just grow and grow and grow. And the amazing thing is, as soon as you open the door and start listening to the feeling, they then begin to quiet and back down. And to a lot of people, it would seem kind of weird to think like, wow, I could spend an hour outside in nature and that would be a fun experience, like listening to the thoughts in my head. Like, people would think, no way could that
happen.
I'm a
weirdo. Yeah.
But it can happen. And that's remained like a really consistent practice. When you say therapizing yourself, that is exactly what you can do out there. And I also think with mental health, some people are really struggling and there's kind of this like, oh, wait for therapy sort of thing. And I think therapy is magic. I've had therapy. I actually am in therapy. I have it every 2 weeks with a guy who's been helping me a lot throughout these last few years. So I think therapy is awesome. But I also think we really underestimate our own capacity to solve a lot of our stuff if we just create the space for the messages to be heard.
Like you just said, your gut is such a powerful tool.
Mm.
And your gut is your second brain. And your gut knows when you're in danger or not.
Yeah.
So just how you said how your gut knows if alcohol is bad for you because it makes you feel sick initially. If smoking is bad for you because it makes you feel a bit gross. After you watch porn, you always feel a little bit, like you just said.
Ashamed.
Like ashamed. Those feelings... It's the same when you meet somebody and you know that there's something not right about them. And you're like, your energy's weird.
Yeah,
don't know. Your gut's telling you that.
Yeah.
Listen to it. Because your gut does know. Your brain might be distracted by what they're wearing and how rich they are and how successful they say they're going to make you.
Mm.
But your gut actually knows who they really are. And our brain can often, sometimes, I think, distract us from who somebody really is. I don't think your gut can do that. I think your gut will tell you if someone's a good egg or a bad egg.
It does.
Right?
We have such strong like instinctive feelings in us. And you can tune into that at any time, whether it's that, whether it's like you're lying in bed, you wake up and you think, so you've listened to this podcast, you think, shit, I'm addicted to social media. And one of the biggest things is waking up and not going straight into a quick source of dopamine.
Yeah.
Because... effectively, our brain wakes up and it craves dopamine. So for the hunter-gatherers, that meant go find food, go build shelter, look after the kids, all these useful things. Wherever it gets that first hit from, it craves in that direction for the rest of the day. So if you get it from a vape or social media, you're literally biasing your brain to want it even more the rest of the day.
No.
Yeah.
What?
I know. Whereas like if you got it from something that was slightly effortful, you made your bed, you brushed your teeth, you had a shower, you washed your face, anything, your brain's like, all right, this person wants effort throughout the day rather than quick pleasure. So that first moment you wake up is everything. And back to that instinct thought, if you wake up, I'm about to go for my phone. If you instinctively check in with yourself, you don't want the phone.
No.
But your brain has got this like, oh, I really want the dopamine. I want the dopamine. And the more you just like take a breath and ask yourself, okay, what do my body actually want? And then it's like, my body wants to get out of bed and be a proper human. It doesn't want to be this lazy piece of shit. But like, you have to listen to that feeling and it begins to guide you on a much, much better path.
Oh my God, you're so right. Whenever I get out of bed, I'm like, I'm not going to check my phone today. Mm. And then when I do, I feel sick because I'm just like, oh, even if nothing's bad's on there. And it's like, Shivani, we're giving you £1 million to go fly to LA and build your own studio. I would still, if I put my phone down, be like, oh God, I checked my phone. Because you're right, my brain doesn't want that.
It doesn't. And that feeling of guilt, for example, guilt is a really powerful feeling. Guilt, again, is a survival mechanism. Like the reason a human would experience guilt is because it's you're doing and engaging in a behavior that's not advantageous to you or somebody else. Like if a parent was ridiculously overly unkind to their kid, they'd suddenly get rushed with guilt in their body. And that would be the brain and body saying, no, that wasn't right. That's not, or you do something unkind to your partner or anything. And that emotion, if you're feeling like guilty a lot of the time, that is a very clear sign. Like maybe I do feel pretty shit when I nail a massive Cadbury's chocolate bar or whatever it might be. And you don't want to feel guilt. You want to feel proud of yourself. That's the opposite of guilt. It's like, oh, I feel quite proud of how I'm engaging in my life. Wow. And that's why like when you wake up in the morning, you're like, holy shit, I got up and made my bed. I went for a little walk. And that feeling of pride in yourself is magic. It's like one of the best emotions we can have. And if you start chasing pride and then getting away from that guilt feeling, your life ends up a hell of a lot better.
You mentioned an interesting point because I was watching some of your reels today and you said, we should be chasing the natural high instead of this fake high that we've made up in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you because actually what you've just said is if you're chasing this feeling of proud and having a lot of pride, then actually that's what your focus is going to be on, right? However, now I'm going to link it back to what I think that everyone's saying in society right now is also like, you shouldn't be so obsessed with like being proud of yourself all the time. And you're like, you know, you can do things that you're not proud of and we're not all perfect. And then aren't we basically encouraging people to just have this very success driven mindset where we're just focusing on one thing completely, which is how much better can I be today?
I do agree. That's a complicated aspect of this. But I also think in a world where it's very tempting, all this stuff, we do need a fair bit of discipline in our brains that does seek for that feeling of being proud of ourselves. It's really important to understand that's not necessarily just proud of ourselves in our work or how productive we are as a human. Like, you can feel proud of yourself because you took some time out of your day to help your mum with something. Okay. And that's not bad. That's like not like a addiction to productivity.
Yeah.
So it's proud in any sense. And like, again, proud of that example of helping your mum, survival mechanism, helping someone in your family, it helps the tribe. Like, everything is down to that core feeling of survival within humanity. So I don't think it's necessarily that bad. And my favorite definition of addiction I've ever heard is by Andrew Huberman. And he says, addiction is the progressive narrowing of the things that bring you pleasure. And when you look at your life, you may notice that, like, when you start getting addicted to things, the majority of your pleasure is coming from a few very finite sources. It might be coming from a vape, from social media, and from porn. And those might be the moments you're feeling best. And on the other side of that, a good life is the progressive expansion of the things that bring you pleasure. And when you start getting out of addiction, you start getting pleasure from helping your mom and going for walks and your work and cleaning your house and cooking healthy food. And once you start expanding and chasing the natural high, expanding the things bringing you pleasure, it becomes more and more easy to sacrifice these little acute moments, because overall you're just in this much higher state. And that's where we're all seeking to be, in this like really nice high dopamine state, I love life. That's where we want to be. And we're artificially spiking that experience of feeling it. But if we go into a just like a more steady, okay, so I'm getting pleasure from all these more natural sources, suddenly it's like, oh, cool, maybe I don't need all the addictive shit as much.
This is so interesting, because how I'm looking at it is you're basically saying that there are things that we can do to reset our dopamine brain, our dopamine source.
Yeah.
And then we can actually start to see the real dopamine in our life, and that's going to make us feel better than all these artificial sources.
Yes.
Okay. How the hell do we reset? Let's just say I'm really addicted to alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate myself for it. It's ruining my relationships. I drink every weekend, 3 times a week, and I get so smashed. I don't know how the hell to get out of it. I've tried to give up many times. I don't know what to do. What do I do?
Okay. Step one, observe the negative. So we've covered that. Observe the negative it's actually bringing to your life. Stop only focusing on the positive. Step two is you're going to start going on walks and actually talking to yourself about the behavior. Okay, no headphones, no phone, go on walks and you chat to yourself about it. And even if it's hard discussions to have, you have to have the conversation, because motive has to come from somewhere and it's going to come from you. No one else is going to change the behavior. So you have to start like adding wood to that fire effectively. After that, you need to really experience what abstinence feels like. Abstinence is not having the addictive thing. The reason you have to have abstinence is ultimately with abstinence, you're going to find that you feel much better without it. So say, for example, watching porn. Like, I grew up teenager watching porn. Thought it was great. Really fun, stimulating, all that kind of stuff. So then in my head, it's like, why would I ever quit this behavior? It's not having that much of a negative impact on my life. I feel fine. I'm still like at university. I'm still doing all right. Why would I quit it? If I then go down the path of, okay, so I feel a little bit shit after I watch porn. So that's me observing it. And I'm going on walks and I think, it's kind of rank that I'm like watching porn in the evenings. That's kind of like disgusting. And if something's making you feel a bit disgusted with yourself, then that's a good indication that change needs to occur. Then you have to have the abstinence to even know what the hell is going to happen without it. And all I discovered is within about 2 weeks, I was like, right, I'm going to see if I can do 2 weeks without watching it. Which at the time, like if you've watched porn every day for like your whole life, that's actually quite a long time.
Mm.
Within a week, I was like, holy shit, I feel really good. I feel like much more driven. I feel more focused. I'm waking up and getting out of bed much easier. And I was thinking, shit, is this really just the porn? And then I was like, I need to have more of a, because of my like neuroscience background, I need a bigger study sample size effectively. So then I go to my brother, my best mates. I'm like, right, everyone, you got to quit porn. And they're like, fuck's sake, TJ's come up with another ridiculous experiment that we have to do. And his other experiments were more fun, the ones I created when we were younger. So then I got them to do it. Very quickly, I hear the exact same message back. Within a week, I'm feeling way more driven, focused, less kind of worrisome in my head. And I start expanding it further. So then I'm like, right, I have to have the courage to post this on the internet. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to be that guy that talks about porn. But then I'm kind of like, fuck it, the world needs it. I'm just going to sacrifice myself and make this video about porn.
Okay.
Make the video about porn. And then we start getting hundreds of messages on my Instagram from men saying, mate, I stopped watching it. Suddenly I feel much more driven and much more focused. And it's simply because you're literally about to go to sleep. Your brain's like, right, here's my big sleep restoration dopamine period. Just before you go to sleep, you annihilate the dopamine. And then it doesn't get that big climb that it wanted. It's just trying to recover off the porn. So you're waking up, low dopamine. You feel like shit. But you don't actually know. You've just made that normal. So you don't think that is feeling shit because you've never had the abstinence. So if you have the period away from it, you start having this growing motive of I can change this behavior. And then nowadays, say for example, I'm like, oh, it would be kind of fun to watch some porn. It's not like the thoughts have gone from my head. I then have this thing that I can think about. I'm like, oh no, but if I don't watch it, I feel this certain way. And whatever the behavior is, whether it's like you're trying to come off vaping or you're trying to scroll your phone less or you're trying to stop drinking as much, you have to really build a big seesaw on the other side of this is all the pleasure it gives me. I get really fucked and it's really fun and I have good bants with my mates, say with drinking alcohol. But you're not thinking about the negative. If you get really clear on the negative and then you start building a positive on the other side of the seesaw of all the things that happen if you don't have the substance, suddenly the seesaw begins to tip. And gradually, like for example, with me with alcohol, I came to discover that just like my life is a significantly better experience without alcohol. But I was convinced that that was the opposite way around. Wow. So those are the beginning steps I'd follow through.
Okay, but I'm going to challenge you because
hit me.
Somebody who takes, let's just say, drugs like once a month. Let's just say someone who takes drugs once a week. For them, they are saying, look, Friday night has come. And whether this is actually drugs or just getting a bit drunk, Friday night has come. And you're now asking, I know I'm going to feel shit on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I know that on Monday, I'm not going to be my most effective. And I know that on Sunday, I'm going to have a McDonald's and that's not going to make me feel good or have the Domino's or whatever, right?
Yeah.
First of all, I bloody love McDonald's and Domino's and having it once a week is not going to kill me.
Yeah.
Secondly, I'm doing really well in my job. And actually, I just got a promotion last week. So clearly, I'm managing my best. Thirdly, I'm not talking about my own personal experience, by the way. thirdly, I play sport 3 times a week.
Nice.
Again, not talking about me. I do like badminton and rugby and something else, tennis. And so actually, you know what, TJ? Drinking on a Friday night and getting absolutely hammered and, you know, taking Coke or MD or whatever, heroin, it's not really a big deal for me. There's not that much negativity. And if I'm honest, listening to this podcast, yeah, I probably am addicted to social media on my phone. But who isn't?
Fascinating question. You basically described all my friends. So like
the reason I did that is because I wanted us to kind of talk about somebody who at home is like, yeah, get what you're saying, but I'm not at that stage where it's making me feel sick. I'm not at that stage where I feel shit about myself. I'm at the stage where I'm actually doing well in all areas of my life. And I know I've got one thing that I'm addicted to, but I don't really care. Why should I quit?
So as you've challenged me, I'm going to slightly challenge you back. And I would say the only reason that person has got this far in the podcast is because there's a part of them that is curious about this piece of advice. And I would simply ask, loads of my mates do all these things. And I'm not the mate, considering I also was like the main party one, I'm not there to now judge them. I think it's great that they all want to have loads of fun and people can do whatever they want with their life. If you absolutely love your life and your life feels amazing and you're happy with your career and you feel healthy and your relationships are strong and you feel physically good, then like keep on the path that you're doing, if that's how life feels good for you. I think the most important advice is if that isn't the case, if you think, I do feel pretty shit at times and I would like to feel better, then it's time to open the door and change the behavior. I think it's all down to you. I think a lot of people, like for example, I'm in my 20s, all my mates probably think like, I'll just sort it out in my 30s. And I imagine like maybe they will sort it out in their 30s and that's fine. I think for me, I maybe took the behavior too far too early and maybe I wanted to change. I also think like, I wanted to experience like highs from all like a more prolonged period of my day. Like yeah. As much as I loved being like super party lifestyle on like Friday, Saturday, that kind of thing, I was feeling good for a really acute period of time. But I discovered like I just really like feeling good the majority of the time. Like I like on a Monday sitting in a coffee shop with my laptop and feeling really good in that period. I don't want to feel all crap whilst I'm having to work because that's just not a fun experience for me. So I think if you feel like the majority of your life feels good, feels fun, feels amazing, keep doing whatever you're doing. If you feel like your life could feel a hell of a lot better, then begin the path.
I think you're so right. I think the thing is that so many people who have got this far in the podcast will be like, there is something that I want to do. So let's help them. How quickly can somebody break an addiction?
Fast. I really believe fast. I think shifts can happen really quickly.
How quickly?
I honestly believe that night that I talked about where I had that conversation with myself, I think literally the addiction basically ended at that night when I had a proper discussion with myself about it. I can remember it so clearly. And I was also drunk at the time and normally get like bad memory and stuff. And it's like this crystal clear conversation in my mind of like, this just isn't going to lead to a sick life and I want a sick life. So as in a good life.
Yeah.
Not a sick life, like without breaks. And I think then the whole relationship with the addiction begins to shift because for a long time you've been lying to yourself about the fact there's no negative and now it's time to like at least begin that conversation. There are then some really important steps to take. We've talked about a number of them. One of the biggest things for our dopamine system, and at the end of the day, you're just craving dopamine. Like, humans crave dopamine. Hunter-gatherers, that meant they went out and hunt, found food, raised kids, whatever.
Yes.
We're all craving dopamine. And now there's a million different ways in which we don't have to always get it from our work and gym and stuff. We can get it from all these crappy sources. And we now are like predisposing ourselves to need a lot of dopamine in our brain to feel good. That's not necessarily a bad thing for you as a human if you find one main what's called flow state activity in your life. Flow state is when you get so immersed in a task that you lose track of time. That's the simplest way to understand what flow state is. Say, for example, actually out of interest, like what would you say is the answer to that question? The podcast. Mm. Okay, so currently your brain will be building a ton of dopamine because you're entering what's called flow state. If you look at like a hunter-gatherer, actually having to hunt an animal, can you imagine how deeply focused you'd have had to become in order to successfully do that? And all humans need a flow state activity that's going to build so much dopamine that their brain's going to be less craving of all the crappy sources. So whether it is in your career, there might be something in your career that gives you flow state. It might be playing sport gives you flow state. It might be an artistic activity. I know lots of people now are getting into these things called like High Rocks and like CrossFit and all those kind of like gym activities. What they're experiencing is flow state. There's also loads of other benefits to exercise and that kind of stuff. Mm. But their brain's getting so deeply immersed in something that is building the dopamine like crazy. And it's really interesting. Like, there's such a movement on TikTok, for example, in London of people that get super into this like healthy lifestyle. They start joining run clubs or they start joining High Rocks, and suddenly they also start going out a little bit less and being like, maybe I don't have to get fucked every Friday night and all that sort of stuff. And it's not a coincidence that occurs. The brain is suddenly satisfied with how much dopamine it's receiving from the CrossFit session, for example. So it's like, maybe I don't need to screw myself up with the alcohol as regularly. And again, it's not about completely eliminating these behaviors. You don't have to do that. All my mates drink. They sometimes ask me questions about not drinking. I'll share my thoughts, but I say keep doing whatever's making you happy. However, if you just start finding a more of a balance with these behaviors, life's going to get so much better. Life's only shit when your life becomes completely immersed in the addictive stuff.
I think also the conversation you have with yourself is just so important in terms of what you just said about not being like, I hate myself for this. Mm. Last week, it was really funny. It was a Friday night and I was at home by myself. I had no plans and everyone was busy. And I was like, I don't actually want to make plans because I've been so busy. I want to spend an evening by myself. But it was the first time I'd spent an evening by myself in so long. I felt so uncomfortable.
Interesting. Yeah. Fair.
And I love being alone. I love being alone, but I felt really uncomfortable. Mm. And I remember talking to myself being like, why do you feel so uncomfortable? And I was like, maybe because I haven't done this before. And I felt so sick. And I was like, okay, what's going to make you happy? So I went to Sainsbury's. I got some of my favorite foods.
Okay.
I then came back home and then I made it. And I was like, how lovely is this? And then I also put myself in the future and said, when you have kids one day and you're married, you are going to crave this evening more than anything. And you're going to be like, why did I not enjoy this evening by myself? And I still felt upset. I still felt anxious. Now, in that moment, one of my friends messaged saying, hey, do you want to go out? I didn't want to go.
Interesting.
I didn't want to go. I had an event that evening. It was International Women's Day, by the way. Can you imagine? There was like millions of events going on that day. I said no to every single one of them. I didn't want to go. And yet, even though I didn't want to go and I was at home, my brain was still like, wait, you're unhappy. You're alone. Like, why are you by yourself? And I was registering those thoughts at the same time to be like, why am I feeling this way? And I think it's about in that moment, instead of being like, I have to just like escape because that's exactly what I want to do. I don't want to be at home by myself on a Friday night. It was about really like sitting with my thoughts and being like, okay, well, actually the reason for this is I haven't done this in a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad. Maybe I feel scared that I'm not going to get to do this again for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm scared about the future where I'm never going to get this opportunity again. And I'm feeling anxious. And there were so many different thoughts that went through in my head. And then the next day I woke up and I went to a run club. And oh my God, I have never in my life felt that happy.
Really?
I'm not joking. For a long time.
What?
I felt so bloody happy. I don't know. I literally went to this run club. I was so out of breath. I like couldn't really run. Went to this run club, met the most amazing people. And by the way, I don't go out on Friday night and party a lot, so it wasn't unusual for me. Mm-hmm. But you know, I took that evening to rest and I actually felt well rested in such a long time. And I felt like that massively increased my mood.
So you said that you weren't feeling that good initially on that night. Then you went and bought a nice dinner and stuff. and then had a chilled evening, but had a little bit of complication with it. Yeah. And the friend texts you saying, do you want to go out?
Yeah.
If she had texted you before you went to get the food, would you have gone?
No, I already, I know there was loads of International Women's Day.
Okay, so you knew you
weren't. I didn't want to go.
And what was the craving for the night in? What was creating the desire?
The thing is that I feel like I'm always going to stuff these days. Okay. And like I said, I've always been someone who likes to spend time alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I'm so always with people. So spending time alone when someone's in the house is very different to being completely alone.
Agreed.
This is what I always tell people is like, if your parents are in the house or your friends are in the house, it's very different to like sit in your room and spend time alone.
Mm-hmm.
But actually being alone with nobody there, nobody to ask you anything, is a very different feeling. And I almost wanted to challenge myself because I was like, why am I not spending enough time alone? Also, last week, it was raining a lot, so I didn't go for my walks alone. So I felt like I hadn't got any thoughts
like
out of
processing.
Exactly.
It is almost like the time alone is like time to clean all that crap that buzzes around in your head and like has to have its little moment to be thought about.
Yeah.
I really think spending time on your own is really good for you. I think it's ridiculously important, like even within this addiction conversation, but any conversation that you like have a good relationship with that voice that's in your head, like you have to be mates with that person. And it's pretty easy to not be mates, to kind of like in the quiet actually hear like a bit of a dickhead like talking to you, telling you off, etc., or telling you you're not cool or not fun enough or whatever it might be. This like voice comes in. And with any relationship, if you meet like a new partner and you're trying to like get connected with them, you have to spend a lot of time chatting with them in order for that bond to build. And with ourselves, like we don't really give that much time for the bond to build. So then we don't build one. And then it's like a really negative relationship. One thing I would say is when you're spending time on your own, is the phone has to be gone, because it's extremely confusing for your brain to observe other humans socializing while you're not. And it creates this big like envy, jealousy experience within you. And that doesn't mean no tech. Like you sit, watch a movie, watch your favorite TV show on Netflix, cook your dinner, whatever it might be. But if you sit there scrolling, you'll just feel this like deep dissatisfaction with the fact you're on your own. And yeah, on your own, I think it's good. Whether you're on the walks or an evening in.
On your own and when you're at home scrolling. I mean, I watched one of your reels the other day when you were like, stop scrolling while you're watching TV.
Yeah.
That is something that I do all the time.
Yeah.
It is honestly shocking. And the thing is like, when I'm, like I said, when I was up Friday at home by myself, I was watching people. I was on my phone. I'm not going to lie. I was on my phone. I was scrolling.
As was I probably when I made that video.
A part of me was like, why is it that I don't want to be at home by myself right now? But if you pay me £1 million to be at that place right now, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go. And I was watching, very weirdly, How to Be Single. Okay. And it was showing them on a party night out. And I was like, thank God I'm not out. Every time I'm out, I always feel I wish I was at home. Every time. Very, very few occasions in my life, by the way, do I feel I'd rather be here.
It's interesting, that thought, because then you get into the thought of like, does that mean I don't like socializing?
And everyone's like, you're an extrovert. So I'm like, what's wrong with me?
But I just think sometimes like where we're seeking to experience that social connection shifts throughout our life. Like you, for example, said it was the happiest moment of your life when you're on that run. That was socializing. But maybe it's just you don't like what a night out is anymore. And like, I've come to experience that.
I've never liked it.
I actually moved out of London like last year because I just like wasn't super connected with like the nights out I was going on effectively. I still spend like a few days here a week. But I think it's okay to just decide what you like and actually follow that path. Like, I really enjoy like having new friends like at the gym and going for like hikes on the weekend and stuff. And that might not be cool that like, all my friends are in London getting super pissed, and that's maybe cooler. However, like the more you actually listen, like spend time with yourself and listen to what you really want, and the more you do what you really want, the happier you're going to become effectively. Yeah. And it's important. The TV thing is interesting because the whole game plan of this whole addiction thing is try and stop destroying your dopamine system. That's like what the message that is trying to be shared here. And earlier I explained those curves with you, those dopamine graph curves. So you're hunting for an animal, really slowly rises 5 hours, then it slowly falls back down. Not bad for the dopamine at all. Actually, the absolute optimum for dopamine. TikTok, for example, really quick spike, really quick crash. Because you open the app and like TikTok literally entertains you so far, faster than any other app has ever done it. That's why they're now like the fastest growing. And now all of them have had to clone it because they're just like jealous of basically how quick a dopamine spike they're getting. And these companies are super aware. Like they are having neuroscientists like myself working in these teams and figuring these dopamine spikes out. And the faster it spikes, the bigger the crash. That's why like cocaine is worse for you than alcohol, because cocaine will spike it faster than alcohol will. For context, alcohol would 2x your dopamine, 2x your dopamine in about 15 minutes.
Right.
Whereas cocaine would 2.5x your dopamine within 9 minutes. So one goes up pretty quick and crashes. One goes up really, really quick and crashes. And that's where, like, wow, the extent of the negative impact of it is a bit stronger with the cocaine than the alcohol.
Both. And what's TikTok?
They don't have the numbers yet. I'd love to give it. I actually imagine, like, it's probably pretty similar to what cocaine does to your brain. I really think it
really?
Will be. But that study is yet to be done. So
but smaller, no? Because when you open TikTok, it tells you the notification, like how many people have followed you, how many likes you got. Same with Instagram. It's almost instant.
It's not actually the likes and follows that are doing the dopamine as much as the content itself.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, explain that to me. If I go on and it says I've got 1,000 likes compared to, let's just say, your reel that comes up about don't watch TV while you're, don't be on your phone while watching TV. You're telling me that your content of telling me not to be
my
on my phone.
My content is amazing.
I'm
no,
just joking.
That is.
But do you see what I mean? If you follow good pages that are really good for your mental health and really good for understanding your patterns, I'm not talking about, you know, watching one of those, you know, those things. They're really satisfying. Have you watched them?
Well, yeah, I've seen a lot of satisfying types.
Yeah, or like, you know, like a burger being made. You're telling me that the content is more addictive than actually the likes and follows and the shares.
I also experienced that follower and likes and views dopamine addiction, for sure. I have to really manage it myself. Yeah. Like, I have to have rules where I post at 3 p.m. That's like the time of which day I post. And then I'm not allowed to then look at Instagram until I've cleaned up my dinner. That's like my rule. So
I'm trying to get a spike, like, don't you get a
I do get a
hit?
Spike, but it's the frequency of the hits is actually worse than just like one moment, effectively. Oh. So if I check it all afternoon whilst I'm trying to do my work and shit, it's going to completely screw my dopamine. And if I've checked it before I go to the gym, everything's just lower dopamine. So it's better for me to just like do a load of hard stuff, get my dopamine nice and high, and then deal with either like it's going to elevate more, or you get that disappointment feeling when a piece of content doesn't do well, which is very annoying.
Yeah, all the time.
Inevitable.
Very normal, everyone, by the way.
Very normal. The important thing to understand, though, with that is obviously only a small percentage are posting and seeking for thousands of likes. The majority of people engaging with social media aren't posting content. They're simply consuming it. And they're not going on Instagram because they're checking whether they've got followers or likes. They might be checking for DMs if, like, someone they fancy's messaged them. That's quite like a dopamine-y type thing. However, the majority is just the stimulation of the videos themselves. Like TikTok, for example, didn't do a better job of showing you your likes and followers than Instagram. They did a better job of showing you stimulating content than Instagram, and they became the one that people spend the majority of their time on. And that's simply because our dopamine seeks for high stimulation, loads of novelty, lots of excitement, color, realism, all that kind of stuff. And that TikTok feed is just slightly more of that than the Instagram feed.
Fascinating. Okay, so we're going, but we've digressed. Sorry.
Yes, we're on the TV thing.
We're on the TV thing. Tell me.
So let's say you open TikTok. Within 10 seconds, you're like, fuck, this is quite good. This is quite stimulating. And you start your scroll. If you click play on a TV show on Netflix, it is going to take at least probably 5 minutes until you're entertained. And then you're going to have to remain very focused on it to receive joy from that TV show. And you'll notice if you watch a TV show with your phone in your hand and you don't have deep focus on one of them, you don't even enjoy it at all, really, the TV show. And again, that's coming back to that flow state thing. The brain just wants to be focused on one thing at a time. So if you watch TV, it really doesn't damage our dopamine system that badly. And this is hilarious because
what?
I'm in schools all the time, and like, kids don't watch TV anymore. That's not what they do at the time. They only scroll TikTok. Like, in some of our testing processes, we're seeing average daily screen times of 15 hours a day in kids. 50, and like yours might be 5 or 7 or whatever it might, maybe less.
I should look at mine, shouldn't I?
But they're spending a lot of time on these phones. And now I'm in schools as part of some of our teaching, literally trying to convince kids to watch more TV. And if you went back 20 years, that would be seen as like the worst piece of advice a neuroscientist could give, is like, kids, watch more TV. But comparatively to TikTok, based on the dopamine spike and crash, TV still nowhere near as good as any kind of healthy behavior, but it's still a hell of a lot better than TikTok. It's like having a lower alcohol beer than having a strong alcohol beer, effectively.
That is so interesting, because I think a lot of parents will say you either have TV time or screen time. You know, screen time is all in one, either TV or iPad or laptop,
yeah,
or whatever.
Very different.
Oh,
all screen engagements are very different. People are perceiving that, like, oh, tech is bad for dopamine. Tech is by no means bad for dopamine. If you sat on your computer and you were doing some kind of creative building of like presentation, or you were coding something, or even if you were gaming and it was a very challenging game that you were playing, if any effort was engaged within that engagement with the computer, then it would be building dopamine, not crashing it. Because your brain is just rewarding effort. That's all it's trying to do, is reward effort and then try and negatively reinforce, don't do quick stuff. So if you look at, say, like a kid's playing on an iPad, and that scene is really bad. If that kid was playing like some kind of strategy game on that iPad, that wouldn't be that bad for their brain. Of course, it'd be better if they're running around in nature with their friends. It's not like you can even compare it to something like that. But if they're on that, compared to if they're playing Candy Crush, which is like that, the biggest like success app of all time is Candy Crush in terms of games. The reason it's so successful is because it's so easy. Like, it even draws the line for, it's literally like a game for toddlers, but adults play it. It draws the line for where you have to put it in, you click it, and then loads of colours burst, and it's so basic. So then it's spiking the dopamine and crashing out. And I see it on the tubes all the time. People are sitting there playing loads of Candy Crush. And you would think of that as such a harmless behaviour. That's not going to do anything negative to my brain. But it is. You'll then get on the train on the way home and think, oh, I feel kind of flat. And you're worried about your work or your relationship. And it's not your work or your relationship. It's low dopamine levels that's occurring because of the engagement.
And all you're doing is just pacifying it. You're just giving yourself a pacifier by playing it constantly.
100%. And then when you start letting go of these behaviours, like, I was hooked on all this shit. So it's not like I come from a place of judgment with it. Like, yeah. I was worse than probably the majority of people that will be listening to this podcast. But it's like, that's why when I came away from it and started experiencing what it's like to feel really good, I was like, shit, people need to know this. Mm. Like, it's so nice feeling really good and feeling really happy. And I think so many people don't necessarily even know what feeling really good feels like anymore, because we've got all these subtle behaviors in our life that we don't even realize are impacting us. And then you start stepping away and thinking, shit, I feel quite good.
You told me earlier that the first step, making sure you identify the negative behavior.
Yeah, observe the negative that it's creating.
Observe the negative. Second was...
start going on walks and actually like spending some time having that conversation with yourself, preferably in nature.
Yeah, in nature. The third was giving yourself that abstinence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth was...
so the fourth is going to be talking to someone about these experiences that you're having. For me... my whole family are addicted to everything. We've all been through this journey. So like, really? And there is genetic predispositions to these things. There's even this thing called the A1 variant of the DRD2 gene, which people don't necessarily need to remember. But if you have this gene, you're more predisposed to finding things super addictive. You basically have slightly lower levels of dopamine within your brain naturally. So anything that's going to give you a dopamine hit is going to give you a really big high. So things like vaping or sugar or porn, anything's going to feel extra good. Everyone, it feels good for everyone, but these things are going to feel extra good.
Oh, wow.
And then some people are really non-addictive. Like some people are just like, nope, I don't really care about any of that stuff. And they've got naturally really high dopamine anyway. So they're not getting that bigger buzz off things because they're like, meh, it's all right. I feel pretty good anyway. My family and I, all super hooked and everything. We've all been through journeys with alcohol, all that kind of stuff. And for me and my brother and sister, who have all been through this process of trying to get off this stuff, having each other to talk to about it has been really useful, because we've been able to actually have a discussion around these are the benefits I'm experiencing as a result of not engaging with the behavior. And it starts to then affirm these feelings, because it's really, really difficult to quit an addiction. And you need to build a ridiculously strong, powerful force within you that wants that. So whether it is observing the negatives, or you're going out on the walks and building that conversation with yourself, you're having the abstinence, you really learn what the positive actually feels like, and then you're having conversations, you're then really affirming, right, this is a change I want to make.
Then
if I was going to the fifth step, it would be you have to find your flow state activity. This is the final step. And if I didn't find flow state in aspects of my work, which I've discovered, like niche things, I discovered that I absolutely love designing slides on Canva, which is super niche.
Really?
Always thought I was shit at art my whole life. Discovered that I absolutely love that activity, and I would happily do that on a Saturday morning for fun, effectively. I would see that as pure joy, designing things visually. And
you're hired.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a job. The reason I share that it's so niche is that it means you have to really experiment and find something that you really enjoy. You're simply looking for something where it makes you lose track of time. That's the easiest thing. But if you find something that builds dopamine naturally and your dopamine starts rising, just like I was explaining there, how some people are more prone to addiction because they've got low dopamine, less prone because they've got high dopamine. If overall your dopamine levels are much higher, then it suddenly becomes like, oh, okay, your brain and body wants it a lot less. There's a good thing I can give an example of that, how that relates. If you look at nutrition, for example, one of the greatest difficulties we're all having is craving all the crappy processed food. It's really challenging. And I've had this. That's also another addiction I've obviously been in, McDonald's, all that crap. And for ages, I tried to constantly tell myself, nope, you're not allowed this. You're not allowed that. No crisps, no chocolate. Blah, blah. And it was just like, well, that's not achieving much. Like, you eventually go to the supermarket and you think, oh. So somehow you have to actually get rid of the craving itself. You have to try and make that want less. And I moved on to a diet whereby I had this framework in my head of I'm only going to try and eat foods that Earth can produce itself and not foods that humans have produced. And like that means you're basically cut down to just like meat, fish, fruit, veg, dairy, eggs. And I was like, I'll just try it, see if it makes me feel good. I enjoy experimenting. And I was doing that. I wasn't even really thinking about the processed food thing. I just heard those foods were good for you. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll just see what happens if I eat them. Ate them for like 2 or 3 months. Really went hard down that path. And then I suddenly realized like, shit, I'm not craving any of the crap anymore. And it's because you're so densely saturated in all the nutrients that you need that the body is no longer actually looking elsewhere for anything else. It's like, oh, I don't actually want it anymore because I've got everything I need. Whereas the majority of society isn't eating enough of the good food. So the body is sitting there low on resources. And then it's like, where's a quick thing that could satisfy this feeling and urge within me? Whether it's food in that sense, that actually goes into things like serotonin. When you're looking at addiction, if the dopamine desire within you is satisfied from your flow state activities because you're getting really immersed in something, you're having a great career or sport or art or hobby or whatever it is that you're getting better at, suddenly the actual urge to want the things begins to reduce and reduce.
Wow, that is so fascinating. So find something that you love,
yeah,
that you can be in a flow state in,
mm-hmm,
and naturally your body will just get the dopamine from that and therefore no longer need it from things like your phone or porn or whatever it is.
If you look at people in our world that have been really big addicts that then have built careers out of sharing that message, Russell Brand, for example,
yeah,
is an interesting case because he was like an extreme addict, super hooked on all this stuff. And nowadays, he's not an addict, but he's still putting a huge amount of effort into his life, mm, and making videos and all that kind of stuff. And you can see, like, when I observe that path, whether you agree with Russell Brand or not,
yeah,
I'm only describing him as just like an observation of someone managing dopamine. He's effectively transferred that addiction of all that crap into an addiction to making videos and sharing a message. But he's now receiving so much flow state from that it will be keeping the addiction at bay. And if you said to Russell Brand suddenly like, no, career's over, can't do that, it'd be very likely that his brain be like, holy shit, I could go backwards. I could turn towards that stuff because it's craving dopamine. Loads of people in our world, like, they get really into an addiction and then suddenly they let go of the addiction, they get very, very good at something else. And it's because those that are addicts are craving dopamine hard. If you start getting a good natural source of it, you actually have a predisposition to get really, really fucking good at that thing because you're like, your brain is wanting loads of dopamine. Like, if, for example, hunter-gatherers, this is pretty interesting with something like ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
ADHD is low dopamine levels. That's what creates ADHD in the brain. It makes you inattentive and hyperactive and all that kind of stuff. And you either can be genetically predisposed to low dopamine, which,
yeah,
is something like I've experienced, for example, and lots of people can, or you can behaviorally screw up your dopamine and end up with low dopamine levels. If you took a hunter-gatherer with ADHD, so they're born, for some reason, they've got low dopamine levels, just happened in their process of genetics. They were born low dopamine levels. They're going to then grow up and the group's going to say, right, you've got to get out there and hunt and build and find shelter and all that sort of stuff. That person's not going to be worse than everyone else. They're going to end up better because they're going to experience bigger dopamine hits than anyone else in the group. So they're going to put more effort in. They're going to be really high performing effectively. And that's why there is actually such a correlation between high performing people and addicts, because like addicts want loads of dopamine and they also can get it from something that's high performing in their life. So finding that flow state thing is what's going to eventually begin to reduce the addiction.
If dopamine is linked so much to ADHD,
yes,
is that why people are saying that everyone has ADHD now?
Yeah, it's fascinating to me this, because
we're man-making ADHD for every human on the planet because we're all addicted.
100%. By 2030, whole world diagnosis of ADHD. I really believe 100% of people will pass an ADHD test. And that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone actually has ADHD, but we designed an ADHD test over the last 50 to 100 years that was designed to effectively deduce someone that has low dopamine, because humans were genetically predisposed to have that. However, now you wake up in the morning, you think, everyone's online talking about the fact they've got ADHD. So I'll probably go for one of those ADHD tests. Before I go, I'll have a nice sugary breakfast and scroll TikTok all morning, crash your dopamine out, and then head off for your test. And then you turn up for the test, you've got really low dopamine, and you've got ADHD. And that is what we're doing in our modern world. And then this dopamine thing, like, humans are only getting better at artificially stimulating dopamine. Like, once upon a time, we created the cigarette, and now we have like a sugary vape that you can have 100% of the time, and it tastes way nicer and it's cheaper. That's a progress. Not good progress, but it's progress in terms of artificial dopamine. And if you take something like this new Vision Pro headset, these Apple headsets they've begun creating, if you think it's stimulating scrolling one TikTok feed, imagine scrolling five at the same time. And that's what's coming, like, in these virtual worlds. So it's really important, like, to get this stuff under wraps. Like, you have to start figuring out, okay, some of this dopamine shit is screwing me up. I need to start figuring out healthy dopamine, observing the negative dopamine, getting familiar with how I'm actually feeling.
So bar the flow state, what are some healthy sources of dopamine? Because if I'm somebody who wants to quit an addiction today, how the hell do I start?
Nice. So I'm going to start at the beginning of the day. Okay. So you wake up in the morning, you've listened to this podcast and you're like, okay, tomorrow morning, I'm going to do something. This is my final day of addiction. Tomorrow morning is when I begin. And you wake up in the morning and you think, shit, I want my vapor. I want my social media or whatever it may be. And you're going to go, oh no, I listened to Siobhan and TJ and they were chatting about this. So I'm just going to try this for one day and only stay on the day you're on. Don't think ahead. Don't think like, oh, but what am I going to feel like in a week? Irrelevant for now.
Okay.
Stay on the day you're on. You wake up in the morning and you're going to immediately just force your way out of bed. No matter how hard it is, you're just going to get out of the bed, okay? And you're going to walk to the bathroom, and you're going to immediately start brushing your teeth. Before you do anything, you might be in a really dozy state, and you're just going to start brushing your teeth, because at least your brain is having to engage effort, and dopamine is then on the climb. And it's very different to what it's been on for the last, like, 5 or 10 years when you've woken up and gone on social media every single day. And that's likely what most people do. Again, no judgment for it. I did it too. So you wake up, you go and start brushing your teeth, and you're gradually waking up. After you brush your teeth, you're going to put a fair bit of cold water on your face. Cold water is something that's really stimulating for this dopamine system. And that's why, like, cold showers and stuff is such a big trend, for example.
Yeah, I want to talk about ice baths as well, but yeah, continue with this dream day.
So you brush teeth, cold water on your face, go to the bathroom, come back, and now you've got to make your bed, okay? All of these activities are simply beginning the path of dopamine being on the rise. And the more you get your dopamine high, the less you're going to crave the crap. That is exactly what happens. That's why people get so into these, like, health crazes and they're suddenly like a really healthy person, because their brain's like addicted to the healthier dopamine instead of the unhealthy. Once you made your bed, you've got to get sunlight. That's going to be like your main thing. So wake up, brush teeth, cold water, make your bed, and then go outside. Whether it's cloudy or sunny doesn't matter. They're both going to build dopamine. If it is sunny, you want to try and look towards the sun. Obviously, don't actually hurt your eyes. But the sun in the morning, evolutionarily, is designed to create tons of dopamine in our brain. So hunter-gatherer was really motivated for their day. Like, all these systems were just being designed like that.
The question, what if you wake up early like I do and it's dark? What do I do?
So you do those other activities. Those are fine.
Then do my work.
Is that what you would typically do? Yeah. Do your work. So I always have this thing in my mind, because sometimes I wake up and it's dark, especially in the winter months. I have this thing in my head where I start saying straight to flow state, straight to flow state. I repeat this sentence to myself in my mind. Because it's very tempting to be like, oh, I'll just like lie and watch my iPad and watch some YouTube
for a bit.
Or like, oh, just a bit of time on social media.
Yeah, yeah, always.
But then it's like, boom, dopamine destroyed. And then like getting yourself into a productive work state or whatever it may be is going to be really difficult. And where you think, there's all that joy in watching YouTube or something when I wake up, real joy is going to come when you finish that task that you know you need to do. That's what's going to really satisfy the feeling you're seeking for. So if you wake up, done those little things, and it's still dark outside, you could go in some kind of work task. And I've actually had this thing where I'm like, no, but you have to start work at 9. Like, we have all these frameworks in our head of when work can start, and like, oh, it's not 9 yet, so I may as well set my phone until 9. But I'll just be like, if I'm up and I'm awake and it's 7 a.m., for some reason my brain's woken up earlier, then I'll just sit down on my computer and do like 30 to 40 minutes of a task. Once I've done a number of challenging things, then I am allowed to engage in some kind of pleasure. But if you've had dopamine way on the climb, it can then cope with a bit of a crash. But if you start with a crash, you're then having a nightmare trying to get anywhere near the behaviors that will climb you back out of it. So I would say simply focusing on your mornings is the key. Few hard things when you wake up, brushing teeth, cold water, making your bed. If you can get sunlight, if it is sunny, come back. When you come back from the sunlight, don't go into social media, go into your work. Do some work and then eventually go to have some time on your phone. And the kind of framework I work with is, I really like my morning coffee. It's one of the greatest things in my life, to be honest. And I tell myself like that I have to earn that coffee.
Got it.
Rather than just being allowed it for just like waking up and watching YouTube. So once I feel like I've done a decent amount of work, I'm then allowed to like sit down, I can have a coffee, I can check my phone, stuff like that. And it is difficult to do these things at first, but all you have to do is try it. And then you'll think, shit, I actually feel really good. And then as soon as you start feeling really good, drive, then you're growing. Like when I talked about adding wood to the fire of like the desire to change, that's how you do it. You start feeling the experience of feeling good for change.
So powerful. I mean, the thing that you just said around the dopamine hit and the crash and kind of how you start your day like that and then it's going to continue like that is so alarming to me, because one of the best things I've learned in this podcast is like your screen isn't bad. I automatically thought if I wake up and I go on my laptop, I'm doing a bad thing anyway, so I might as well scroll social media.
Interesting, yeah.
And the TV thing, actually, I saw your reel and you said this is my nighttime routine and you're watching TV. And I actually went into the comments to see people being like, oh my God, I thought TV's really bad for you.
The thing is, it's not that it's good for you by any means.
But it's not the same as social media.
Not the same as social media. It was interesting when I made that video, because that was a nighttime routine. And like, I'm obviously in control of what I put in these videos. And I could so easily have gone like, I'm a neuroscientist. I get in bed, do some deep breaths and fall straight to sleep in a second.
Do some reading.
And that would, do some reading. But then like, I just don't feel like it's useful to not give full honesty and transparency. And I was someone that lay in bed every single night since I was about 10 years old, scrolling my phone. And in order to get that to a place where I fall asleep quicker, I did transfer it to an iPad. And then I now sit and I watch something. And whilst it would be better to read in bed, 100%, I'm just not going to do that every night. And you have to be realistic with yourself. And it's like, in our modern world, there's so much addictive stuff that we're trying to manage. And sometimes you have to make a trade-off of like, what is worse, effectively? And I find if you have like, say, for example, in bed, like how I explained, like the porn destroys the dopamine before you sleep and you wake up feeling much flatter. Exactly the same if you scroll TikTok till you go to sleep, like porn and TikTok identical. With all of these behaviors, if you put someone in a brain scanner and they sniff cocaine or they drink alcohol or they scroll TikTok or they smoke a cigarette, you wouldn't be able to tell in the brain scanner which one is which. They would all do the exact same thing to the brain. It's just some would be slightly different variations of how high it takes you. And that's also based on how much you personally enjoy the experience of them. So it'd be very unique.
So if you put my brain next to somebody who did cocaine and somebody who did heroin.
Mm. Well, heroin is very strong.
Okay, fine. Cocaine, TikTok.
Alcohol, porn, nicotine.
Can't tell the difference.
Can't tell the difference, especially because each person has a unique level of dopamine spike depending on how much they enjoy it. And you lie in bed and you think the average person might be like having like a sugary pudding and then getting into bed, scrolling TikTok, maybe watching some porn and having a few hits of their vape before they go to sleep. And then they wake up and they feel like shit. And like, I can't be fucked at work and I feel really tired and life's a bit shit, depressing, oh, it's raining outside, blah, 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 blah. But it's really just your behavior that's creating that feeling in you. It's not real thoughts. That's the big thing to understand. Like, it's not real thoughts that are occurring. It's the behavior. And if you can, like, have a decent dinner and then have like yogurt and fruit and honey, something that's still giving you sugar cravings, but it's like healthy sources of sugar. So it's not artificially spiking it as much. And then, you might go on your phone a little bit in the evening, text people, watch a little bit of social media. I always try and think of like going on social media as like a maximum of a 20-minute window. That's about the max the brain can possibly deal with without a big crash. So like go on, hammer your videos or whatever you need to do for 20 minutes. Again, like, obviously it's great to not do these things, but it's better to be realistic. And then much better off in the evening than just watching TV. And like phone has to be out the room. If you have people you live with and like partners or housemates or whatever, they also really need to get on board with this sort of stuff, because there's this thing in our brain called anticipatory dopamine, which is basically, if you've ever, say, like, walked past a pub, seen people having glasses of wine and thought, shit, I want a glass of wine, and it almost excites you, the thought of it. Your brain basically experiences a rise of dopamine without even having the behavior, just at the anticipation of the thought of the behavior. And that's the same as, like, you're sitting in a restaurant with your partner, they get out their phone, and before you know it, your phone's in your hand. And it's because the brain has seen the dopamine rise within them, and it's suddenly like, shit, I want that rise as well. So if you're trying to get off addictive stuff, you can't have the other person engaging with it, because the temptation is going to be too great. So you both watch TV in the evening, put your phones away. Not one of you doesn't nail a tub of Ben and Jerry's while the other one eats their shitty Greek yogurt. You both got to have your shitty Greek yogurt and just enjoy it, learn to enjoy it. And then you get in bed. And if you can put some Netflix on, really low brightness is important based on all like melatonin and stuff and how our brain works. And then just lie there and watch it. And at least your brain will progressively reduce in stimulation. Whereas we're lying there and most of us almost try and max stimulation out so much to the point where our brain forces itself to turn off. Like, we watch so much social media, like, oh, right, I'm going to go to sleep now. Like, kids, for example, like, literally they TikTok themselves to sleep, where they lie there, just keep doing it until the brain turns off because it's that exhausted, like a car running out of petrol. Whereas if you can, just lie there, put something fairly chilled out on Netflix or listen to a podcast or music, whatever it might be, all of these, like, subtle shifts are going to create massive differences in how you wake up. And then you wake up and that routine that I suggested you do is much more achievable because you wake up with a little bit of dopamine in your brain. So you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to give this a try. I'm going to brush my teeth and splash cold water on my face and make my bed and go outside for a little bit of sunlight. And you do these things, dopamine rises and rises. And then once you're in this high dopamine state, you start thinking, fuck, I feel amazing. And then you're like, maybe I don't want as much of that addictive stuff.
You know what? This has really scared me because you know what I do? I hate brushing my teeth and I hate taking my makeup off, by the way. I hate doing it.
I hate taking my makeup off.
Do you? Yeah. So a nightmare of a task. I hate it. As in, like, I really, 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 if I didn't have to do it, I wouldn't. I didn't for years, by the way. Okay. Until I realised that, like, okay, I'm going to, like, clog my pores up and my teeth. I have, like, 15,000 fillings.
Mm-hmm.
I watch TikTok while I'm doing those two things. As in, I say it to myself every day. Okay, come on. It's time to brush your teeth and take your makeup off.
As you reward yourself with
the
TikTok.
As in, I openly say this to myself. Like,
and so you brush your teeth whilst doing that?
Every time. It's the only way I'll do it.
And how do you do it with makeup?
As in, I put it on the thing.
And then
I'll watch a talking video, splash my face with cold water.
This is interesting.
3.5 minutes, because TikTok is now YouTube.
So this is where the whole TV versus phone thing becomes interesting. If you are scrolling TikTok and you choose to watch one of those long videos, that's way better for you.
Oh, then, thank God. I only watch long videos, by the way,
than continuing to scroll.
I only watch
long videos. Because, again, it's all about the spike of the dopamine. So if you watch a slow video, obviously these people that make these videos are really good at a good hook, which spikes dopamine. That whole concept of a hook is a dopamine spike. That's why we're trying to create hooks. We're trying to spike the other person's dopamine in, like, curiosity and novelty. And
oh, all that. Yeah.
That's all a hook is, just a dopamine spike.
Shit.
Let's all make loads of good hooks.
That's a nightmare. So we're all part of the system.
We are. I'm part of the system. I'm literally trying to create good hooks about addiction.
Create a good hook now. That was a good hook.
That was a good hook. And so if you're watching longer videos, that would be good. If you take that a little bit further, it'd be so much better to sit and, like, put an iPad there and watch a YouTube podcast, for example, because it's slower pleasure. You want slow pleasure, not quick pleasure. That's the whole goal. And that's why, like, exercise or anything, work or anything, they give you the most satisfaction because they're the slowest form of pleasure. You don't start doing a task and think, fuck, I feel amazing now. It's when you nearly finish it that you feel good.
So true.
And when you're doing your makeup, you're brushing your teeth. I think that abstinence rule could occasionally be good, maybe just with the teeth and not with the makeup.
Yeah.
So with the teeth, you could try just the peace and quiet and use it as, like, some I'll chat to myself relationship building time. Do some, like, grateful thoughts or, like, celebrate an achievement. Or
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Same things you're grateful for at the end of the day. Or, like you said, watch a 10-minute podcast.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
That's a good idea.
The gratitude stuff is really important, because when I was out there on those quiet walks and I was hearing all this negative shit, it was so annoying. But I was like, I'm committed. Like, I am fairly good at, like, once I commit to trying something, I'll be like, right, I'll at least give it a go. And I was committed to the party lifestyle, for example. So what choice did I have? But when I committed to those quiet walks, I rediscovered what the whole reason is that we do that whole gratitude thing. It's just because, like, I was in this deep state of comparison, constantly thinking about what I didn't have. I don't have enough money, or not good looking enough, or I don't have good enough, like, friends or home or career, whatever it may be. And where comparison is constantly thinking about what you don't have, gratitude is thinking about what you do. And I was suddenly like, oh no, I've got these things and these things and these things. And it makes that voice in your head much more, like, positive and a nicer experience. So if you're going to do some quiet time, maybe try going to sleep in the silence, or you brush your teeth in silence, whatever it may be. Grateful thoughts are a very good way to make that a lot more peaceful.
Sleeping in silence is something I can't do, by the way.
I
really, really struggle with it. I have to listen to a podcast. I put it on a sleep timer, though.
Nice.
But I always listen to something nice before I go to bed, because otherwise it's chaos. But one thing I do want to ask is, let's talk about some quick wins people can do. So you can quickly scroll TikTok and it'll give you a dopamine hit. But there are some quick things you can do that will give you a dopamine hit that are good for you.
Yeah.
Like an ice bath.
Yeah.
Talk to me about ice baths, the benefits of them, why we should do them, and also how the hell we do them. Because I can't imagine myself getting into a cold, freezing ice cube.
The ice bath is an interesting one, because an additional component of how dopamine operates, there's this lady called Dr. Anna Lemke at Stanford University in America. She invented something called the pleasure-pain balance. And if you imagine a seesaw, effectively, when dopamine was developing in our brain, it was developed in an area called the hypothalamus. It's like deep in the center. And hypothalamus is the area of the brain where we can experience pleasure, feel good, feel joy, and so on. And then also feel pain and not feel good. And these two experiences operate on a seesaw. So say the hunter-gatherers do something that's quote unquote painful, like they're surviving outside in the cold, or they're putting a lot of effort into building shelter, hunting an animal, chasing an animal. If they're doing painful things, the seesaw was tipping and giving them a pleasurable response in their brain to make them feel really good, to reinforce the behavior so we continue to do it. The difficulty in the modern world is we've created loads of high pleasure stuff, vaping, social media, TikTok, porn, etc. And it's tipping the seesaw back the other way. Because just like it was trying to reinforce the positive behaviors, the seesaw operates the other way and it tries to tell us, no, these are going to make you feel shit. That's what a hangover is, or that's what withdrawal is from a vape or whatever it might be. It's this pleasure, pain, balance, seesaw. The funniest thing about this cold bath thing, because it's like boomed across the world. It's like such a thing. is pure pain. It's pure horribleness. And it tips the seesaw back the other way, effectively, into that pain. And then a huge pleasure spike increases. To give you context of how big, I told you earlier that alcohol can 2 times the dopamine. Cocaine can 2.5 times the dopamine. Cold water is the immersion is the only thing they found that can also 2.5 times the dopamine. Same as what cocaine can do. And rather than a 9-minute spike and crash, they can see rises for about 2.5 hours. There's this great scientist called Ceramic who's discovered these things. And he actually discovered them a number of years ago in the early 2000s. And effectively, something like cold water immersion is just going to give a shit ton of dopamine. And you see exactly that because people start getting addicted to it. They're like, yeah. Oh, now I'm the cold water guy and I go every day and I'm going to post on the internet about it and all this sort of stuff. The reason that happens is because the brain's like, holy shit, so much dopamine, reinforcement, survival, all that kind of stuff. And then suddenly they want to do it all the time. So yeah, if you can have a cold shower or anything like that, it's good for you.
You know, posting on the internet, some people find like, oh, I don't know what you're posting about it all day on the internet. I mean, if it makes you do something and you stick to it, post away.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
sure.
Like if
post
I...
Post like a story.
Yeah, because it gives you accountability. I mean, when I go to a gym class, there's a class that I do called at BXR called Climb. I don't know if you've ever done it before.
No,
it's basically a Stairmaster for 45 minutes.
I hate the sound of it.
I always post before I go into that class because every single time I'm in the class, I want to leave. And I'm too embarrassed to leave. And I'm because I know that I'll then have to tell my followers I left the class. And I don't want to encourage people to go into a gym class and leave. So now I've just got into this habit of every time I go into the class, just post that you're going into the class. Because then if I do leave, I know that I'm accountable to my followers on saying that I left that class. And I don't want to be that person that's like, hey, guys, I'm leaving every week at 30 minutes because I hate this class. Every time I do it, it always makes me be more accountable. So if you're one of those people that's wanting to be vegan or wanting to eat less sugary foods or wanting to go on an ice bath or wanting to go on a run every day at 5 a.m. and you're scared to post because people are going to judge you, I don't care. Post it if it's going to make you do it. Definitely. Because you're trying to make yourself better as a person. I think we need to like stop judging people for doing that.
Agreed. And also just stop like worrying about so much about what other people might think of you posting that thing. Like it's so easy to get in your head about, oh, what are people going to think of the fact that I've posted about going to my Stairmaster or whatever it may be. But and that's something I've navigated, as I'm sure you have, with posting content online. But you come to discover that like everyone's just in their own heads caring about their own life. They don't really give a shit about like anyone else except themselves. And that's not mean. Like it's just reality. Like we're all very immersed in our own life. Like we do a lot of like social anxiety training with young people, for example, helping them build their confidence. And so much when you're in social situations, we can experience that like spotlight anxiety where we feel like everyone around us is judging what we look like or what we're saying or whatever it might be. But everyone has that mechanism. We're all too busy worrying about ourselves to even analyze anyone else. And it's the same with like posting on social media. Everyone's in their own world. So if like something's going to make you feel accountable, it's going to make you feel good posting it, put it on the internet.
I agree. Sure. There's a lot of parents at the moment that are struggling with their kids in terms of addiction. Mm. And they're really worried that their kids are going to be addicted or stay addicted.
Yeah.
What advice do you give to them?
100%. The most important thing is that flow state activity in their life. It's the only way to solve it. I started the podcast talking about how golf was a real help for me. And from the ages of like 10 to 13, whilst I got into this addictive stuff, the only time I was away from it is because I got really keen on like, I want to be a professional golfer and managed to like channel some of that addiction into it. And if a kid after school doesn't have like some kind of activity they're trying to get better at, like they go for music lessons or they do some art at home or they play football or they do coding on their computer, they do something that they're trying to get better at, then inevitably it's going to be like, well, I'm not doing anything, so I may as well scroll TikTok. And if unless there's something that's going to replace the TikTok, they're just not going to change. And the important thing for parents to understand about young people is we're all addicted to shit. They're a whole nother level because their brain is so much more malleable and they've grown up inside TikTok. For example, like COVID, it was just like 10 hours of TikTok a day for 3 years. So their brain is so addicted to really high dopamine level stimulation. So if a parent is like, just don't go on your phone this evening and play a board game with us as a family, like that's so sweet of that parent because I know they have their best intentions, but that board game is going to be so boring to that kid that they're going to resent you for even suggesting it. The only way you're going to get them off the addictive stuff is if something also stimulates their dopamine to a similar extent to what the TikTok is providing. So taking them to the sea and getting them to jump in the cold ocean, that is going to give them a huge dopamine hit. Taking them to a climbing wall and getting them to climb up a climbing wall, huge dopamine hit. Sport, music. But unless they have something that they're going to get laser focused on getting better at that is stimulating to them, there's no way they can navigate the addictions themselves. So that would be my number one piece of advice.
And what about for an adult? Because, if you're an adult and you're listening to this right now, you know, one of the buzzwords that's going around is, how do I find my passion? How do I find what I'm good at? TJ, how do I find my flow state if I'm somebody who's sitting at home and doesn't know what they're good at?
So you don't necessarily have to be good at the thing. That's one thing. You only have to just like potentially find it intriguing or interesting or potentially enjoyable to you. It's really important to understand you don't have to be good at it. It's one of the real difficulties we have now is like, oh, okay, I'm going to learn to draw. And then you get a pen and a piece of paper and think, well, I'm shit at drawing compared to those people on TikTok. So that's not my thing. So I'm not going to do that one. And then you try another one. Oh, I'm shit at this one. Anytime you start something that's new, you're shy at it. I just described earlier that I like designing Canva slides. They look decent now, if I do say so myself. They did not a few years ago when I discovered I enjoyed doing that. So first thing is understanding, you might be shit at first. The next thing is, I got asked this really interesting question the other day. I was in Switzerland delivering this ADHD theory. And I was talking about kids finding their passions and stuff like that, how important that is. I call it finding their talent. And this teacher said, I do talk to these kids about it, but all they say is the only thing they enjoy is scrolling social media. So like, how am I going to figure out what they do like? When we're scrolling social media, there are certain videos that we really enjoy watching. We might really enjoy watching cooking videos or videos where people draw or sing or play music or dance or clean their house or play sport. When you're scrolling social media, observe as closely as you can what the main content is that you're enjoying watching, because it's very likely that that thing is something that you actually instinctively are potentially good at and could get good at. And I really believe that all humans have the capacity to create. We all have this like desire within us to create in some way, whether it's like within a sports team or whether it's within art or music or whatever it might be. But with that urge, it's getting moderately satisfied by the fact we're scrolling social media, so we're not even trying. Whereas if there was no social media, we'd all get so bored that we'd be like, oh, that thing within me that wants to knit a sweater or do this sport, we would go and do it. But because we're scrolling on social media, we're like, meh, can't really be bothered because I'm at least observing someone else doing it. So whilst you scroll social media, really tune into what's most enjoyable. And like, I, for example, when I was younger, used to love watching people make videos. I always thought like, that's so sick when people make cool videos out in nature. And I just never thought maybe I could do that. And like 4 months ago, I bought a camera because I wanted to actually get like a bit better into the content and discovered that I fucking love being in nature, taking videos. But I never realized that I was watching it because I could do it. I just thought it was cool that they did it. So if you get really in tune with what you're scrolling on social media, figure out what you like and then start testing those things and doing them yourself. That's where your flow state and passion lies.
That is the best piece of advice I think I've ever heard. That is honestly amazing. I was just thinking while you were telling me, and I realized that recently I've been constantly commenting on people who edit their videos well.
Nice.
And I'm obsessed with their way they edit. Like your video, one of the best ones I saw, I was actually really horrible this morning because I was watching it whilst I was in my pajamas, scrolling your bloody TikTok or your Instagram, and it came up with the video and it was split screen.
Oh,
and the first one was like, if you start your day scrolling and you're laying in bed and da 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 da, and you keep scrolling, I was like, for fuck's sake, I've been doing this for the last hour because I woke up and I was feeling ill today.
Mm.
And it was a split screen, and one was like you get up and you like do all these amazing things, and the other one was that you sit there and you just keep scrolling. I scrolled from your one into the next one, and then I was like, I've got enough questions for him today, and I scrolled into another one, and I looked at my phone and I was like, that's exactly what you're doing. And I was just like, the edit was so good. And then I commented on someone's video going, oh my god, this edit is amazing.
Yeah, so maybe some of your flow state lies in editing.
It does. And I would say I hate editing, by the way. I hate editing. I love the output of editing. And I'm always so proud when I've edited a video that's very creative. I'm very proud of myself when I've done it.
And sometimes, like, things that are good for you, they're not necessarily always fun. They might be effort. Like, it wasn't necessarily really fun to run through a forest for 4 hours to get an animal, but it was fun once we had the animal.
Yeah, and it like, makes me feel proud. It actually always makes me feel... If I think about now, all the times I felt very proud of my content is when I've edited it very well.
There you go. And then that means that's a really important activity for you to solve addiction. Because if you... Not necessarily you are addicted to things, but like most of us, you probably are. And if you have this activity that is providing this really good, natural, high stimulation of your dopamine system, then you've got high dopamine. You're not going to crave the crap as much. It's when we're in low dopamine that we crave lots of crap. And just that final point, like say, for example, when you're really hungover, the addictions are the hardest things to manage. The hangover is when it's like, order the Uber Eats, watch some porn, smoke my vape all day, eat my Uber Eats. The reason it's so hard is because the alcohol has put you into low dopamine. So then you're craving this, like trying to get out of it. You're trying to climb out of low dopamine. So with that, say you're doing lots of editing, you're getting yourself into this really nice high dopamine state. Your brain's going to be like, don't really need the vape or the social media or the porn or the sugar, whatever it might be that someone's addicted to.
Wow.
So tune in to what you enjoy most on social media and try and get good at it yourself.
Honestly, amazing. I love that advice. Before we close, I just want to ask you, what's one thing that everyone can do today to increase their dopamine that is accessible for everyone?
Wake up tomorrow morning and splash cold water on your face. Make your bed and go out in sunlight and look towards the sun. No phone involved until you've got back. You have to have in your head sunlight before social media. That's the sentence. I have to see sunlight before I'm allowed to see social media. Then it at least sets dopamine on the right path for the rest of the day.
And what will that do if I do that for 2 weeks?
Change your life if you did that every day for 2 weeks. Can you imagine? Imagine you spend 10
years. What
will
change?
You'll just have so much drive.
Really?
That's what dopamine is here to do, give us drive. And like anything in life that you want, whether you want a really good relationship, you need to put effort into that, or you want to eat really healthily, or you want to be someone that goes to the gym, or you want to do great in your career, the only thing that's going to make all those things happen is if you have drive. And waking up every morning scrolling your social media is killing all of your drive. So you're just moderately satisfying all these things that you want. Whereas if you woke up every morning, didn't go on social media, brush your teeth, made your bed, go outside, sunlight, then social media, you suddenly have a shit ton of drive and you suddenly think, fuck, I'm in the pursuit of all these things. And I've experienced this. Like, I was lazy and addicted. And now, like, I have been fortunate over the last few years to experience, like, a big shift in, like, my life and career and relationships. It's only happened because I got dopamine in check.
This is amazing. I feel like, let's do it together, everyone. From the moment you listen to this podcast, whenever it is, from tomorrow for 2 weeks, cut social media out in the morning, get sunshine, and let's see what happens. Let's do a live experiment. Like, comment on this post back in 2 weeks and tell us what's changed. And let's hopefully hope that it completely changes your life.
I honestly don't think hope is needed. It will happen. If you do that for 2 weeks, your life will be different. I get these messages all the time on Instagram.
I'm going to do it from tomorrow.
It works. It really does work. Just do it. If in 2 weeks you think, man, I feel absolutely shit, go back to scrolling your social media every morning. But I literally believe 100% of people, it will feel phenomenal.
I feel like there's been so many moments in this podcast where my mouth has been like, because I'm so in shock at how simple some of these things are. And I think they are simple, because if you think about what we're addicted to, they're also very simple. We're addicted to such small activities that we think are so hard to change, but actually we can do it. And we can do it by making small changes. We can do it by listening to podcasts like these and learning from you. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of this wisdom with me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.